words appear. The email addresses and groups mentioned in this program are no longer available. The Blind Handyman group does exist in its new incarnation on groups.io. To join, send a blank email to blindhandyman+subscribe@groups.io. That's blindhandyman+subscribe@groups.io. Alternatively, you can join our Blind Handyman Facebook group. Links will be in the description box below.
Show number 71. This is March 15th, 2004, and we're recording right here at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman Show. Don New Computer Shaw is here.
That's right, Mr. Tom.
Shaw now has the newest computer in the house.
The newest one on the block for the moment.
Where's Don Patterson? Anybody know?
Where is Don Patterson?
I haven't seen the guy. My name's Tom Houston, but ladies and gentlemen, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman, he's right here with us today. His name is none other than Phil Parr. Hi there, Phil.
You know, I thought we were all, everybody was going to be here today, and sure enough, old Pat didn't grace us with his presence. I wonder where he is. He's going to say that, well, I thought you were recording on Tuesday again. You know, it was his idea to move. It'll be some.
He'll probably
maybe
drag it in here in a few minutes.
Guess we could call him, but we have a, Sam Fitzgerald is with us. You probably haven't heard us mention Sam because we've never mentioned him.
I didn't mention we had a very special guest.
Sam is an old radio friend of ours.
All the way from Laughlin, Nevada.
Laughlin, Nevada. If
you Nevada, all right.
If you go to Laughlin. 2 weeks you're on the air. Do what now? You did what?
Called you the first week you're on the air.
You did.
Oh, okay. We have talked to Sam then.
It's pretty exciting, isn't it? It's great. Second.
It was so exciting we remembered it.
What a deal.
This will be your second appearance on the show.
Second appearance.
We usually don't have folks back. It's kind of a special thing. But anyway, Sam's an old radio guy. You should do sports for us. Sam and I figured out that we could drive, when he read the sports at 4:30, at 4:35 we could have the car running. We could be from the radio station to the liquor store with a case of beer and back by the time the 5 o'clock news came on.
And he'd sit down and say, hi, everybody.
Well, I'm Sam Fitzgerald. It's 5 o'clock, and you know, like he'd been there all the time, and we'd been racing to the liquor store. And we did it every day for years.
Back what a deal,
radio
man.
Radio station was in Dieball. From Dieball, the country hits, I think it
what a deal.
We did it.
Wouldn't that have been something?
We played a lot of that Good Time Goal, I remember.
We played a lot of good music and had a good time. And it was all. Those were the fun days of my life. If I'd known they were going to end, I'd have certainly.
Oh,
I unplugged the phone.
It never failed.
Yeah, what a deal. That would have been great, man. That's probably Don Patterson himself.
Could the phone be ringing?
As we speak.
Unplugged.
That's a good question.
Don Patterson calling in.
A phone that rings after you unplug it.
Wait a minute. What the deal is, I didn't unplug that one.
Only Phil would have a phone like that.
Only Phil. Reach down behind you and unplug it.
I don't know where to do it.
Pull the big plug.
See, it's sitting there. Well, it's quit. It hasn't quit yet. I meant to do that, and, of course, I forgot to do that. Yeah, the plug that plugs it in. Just
pull the big plug.
Anyway, Don Patterson is not here today, but Tom Houston is back, and Tom is having a little medical problem, but he acts like he feels good today. Looks fine.
Well, thank you.
And it is good to have you back. And then I had a heart attack last Monday. Just thought I would. Nothing else going on.
Yeah, what a deal, man.
No more cigarettes for Phil, I'm telling you.
No more.
No, the guy told me to knock them off now. He said, I had a lot of blockage, and if I didn't, that it was going to be, the big dirt nap. And so,
I've never heard it explained. That's kind of the big dirt nap.
You've never heard it called the big dirt nap?
No.
A good incentive there to quit.
So, just think about it. If you were blind and black and gay, there'd just be nothing you could do. You could make love to an ostrich in North Dakota. So, there'd just be nothing. You'd think of the trouble you'd be in, what they'd really discriminate. I don't know what somebody. Anyway, I was just thinking about that today. How bad off could a guy really be? We'd like to find some black, blind, gay guy and do him on Blind Like Me just for fun. How do you get off on that? Anyway, do we have email today?
Well, yeah, we took some stuff off the list. And
are you up on the mic? Where's your mic?
If you remember correctly, Phil, last time I was on the show, we had a guy. We were talking about shoveling snow, blind people shoveling snow.
Oh, we sure did.
Now, of course, all of us are none of us know anything about shoveling snow. We live in Texas.
That's
Texas. I mean, well, somebody responded on the list to it, so I thought I'd read their little. Response and can blind people shovel snow? It says, Phil, I'm listening to the Blind Handyman at about 8 hour time in good old sunny Sudbury, wherever that is. Now, you ask your friend in Pennsylvania if blind folks could shovel snow. I can say with much, much certainty that yes, a totally blind person can shovel a whole lot of snow. Take it from a Canadian. One year when I lived in Elliott Lake, Ontario, we had 12 feet of the lovely crap throughout the winter.
Whoa.
Push shovels never worked for me. I just used a regular plastic shovel, and I tried to go as straight as possible. I'm also quite short, and the big push shovels were too heavy when full of snow to lift and throw over the bank.
Yeah.
Stay warm down in Texas. This from Malia Dube or Dubey? D-U-B-E.
No, this is Malia Dubey.
Dubey.
Yeah,
Dubey.
We had her. We did her on
Blind Like Me. Sure,
yeah,
we did.
A couple weeks ago. She was really a good guest. She's done a lot of things. She worked in a lumber camp, did all kind of things. And she's on the list.
That was a good show.
She's on the list, and we saw her post. We saw it post on the list. She's done a lot of shows. Snow shoveling. Am I going to be able to say that? Anyway, she's
snow shoveling.
One beer and
I'm
already snow show snuggling.
That's what happens after those heart attacks.
That's what'll happen. All right, go ahead.
Okay, hi, gang. Maybe it's worth mentioning how I measure to set up a metal guide to follow the skill saw. I've made two boards the exact distance from the edge of the left and right base of the skill saw. Normally, I use the one that gives me the measurement to the left of the blade, just because one usually leaves the base of the saw on the board you're saving. Anyway, to make them, clamp the guide on a thin scrap like quarter-inch plywood. The guide should be high enough to cut through your template and allow the saw base to ride along it. So lay the piece you want to cut the template out of on top of the plywood solidly against the guide. Then run the skill saw along the guide, cutting the template. You can then use that template as a measuring block when setting saw guides in the future, so you will know how much to set back or set it back, and you will know exactly where the blade will cut. And you know this is a lot easier to do or show someone than trying to write about it.
I know.
Anyway, it's a lot easier to measure to this block than trying to align a blade or using a tape trying to add or subtract for the width of the base. Mm-hmm. And this is from a gentleman named Ron.
Yeah, because you've got that little lip on the edge of your skill saw that you have to allow for, or your measurement is going to be off as wide as that. And it's usually, what, 2.5 inches wide, Joe?
Yeah.
And so you'd have that, and everything you did would be 2.5 inches off, because you got to allow, if you're scooting the skill saw along a piece of angle iron, well, you got 2.5 inches there that you can't account for.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a good idea. Surely somebody makes a product like that, wouldn't they?
You would think so, yeah.
Somebody would. I don't have a skill saw guide because I don't use my skill saw much. I've got one, but they're so noisy. They're just so I don't know that noise.
Yeah, if you have a table saw, it's just a thing.
Yeah, and I've got a little cheap table, a couple little cheap table saws. So anyway, but that's a good suggestion. If anybody wants any more information, we'll write us, and it will give you this guy's email address, okay?
Okay, all how right. about a little toilet talk here? Now, all we've right, talked about toilet. Toilets before. This guy says, hey, I was just wondering how to adjust the water level in the bowl, not the tank. Now, I think this has been talked about on one of the shows, but I can't remember how to do it. Thanks, Bob.
Well, Shaw, how do you do
way that? Back early in our shows that we've done, we talked about toilets almost every week there.
We did, for
sure. For a while. That was an ongoing discussion, I think, at that time.
Do what?
The blind plumber. It should have been. It actually should have been that. What a deal, man.
So how do you adjust the level, the bowl level?
I was thinking by controlling the amount of water that's in the back of the tank and that goes into the downflow tube, for lack of a better thing to call the tube that the water goes into when the tank fills, fills the bowl.
Yeah, and the amount of water in the tank would determine.
And the amount of water in the tank, and then I guess what's going into this fill tube that goes directly into the bowl.
Are you saying that if you like put a brick in the back of it, and it doesn't hold as much water when you put the brick down there?
Yeah.
That there would be less water in the bowl itself?
I've heard that actually. That was a big water saver thing.
Yes, there would be.
Once upon a time, save that water, man.
That's where the water from that fills the bowl comes from, that the tank, and if there was less water in the tank, then there'd be less water in the bowl. Why do you care?
I don't know. That's the good question there.
You know, I saw this article one time about dogs that stay in the house, and it was toilet water versus clean water from your bowl, which do you like best? It was a little survey that dogs filled out. Why would you care? People want to know weird things. Me, especially, you know, I'm kind of strange, but that's a kind of a strange thing to want to know. But if you adjusted the water in the tank, there'd be, of course, less water in the bowl, looks like to me.
But then the new toilets anyway nowadays are from the last few years, they even have, of course, a lot less water.
Or water saving.
The new water savers. So.
Yeah, they say that you could see some, that they could see what's the word I'm looking for? An increase in water usage during television commercials years ago when people actually, when the networks.
During the big Super Bowl.
Yeah, in the Super Bowl, you see water.
People
increase, everybody
folks
going.
Running, yeah. No kidding.
This has nothing to do with the water level in the bowl or the tank or anything like that. But I was getting a little treatment at the hospital the other day, and I decided I needed to go to the restroom, so I go down the hallway and into the tent I went, you know. The light automatically comes on when you go in the restroom.
Okay.
So I'm over at the commode, and I'm number one, you
don't,
know.
Don't tell us what you're doing.
I'm going to tinkle when I get over there.
That's a good word.
So anyway, there I am, and I'm just going on with my business there and whistling a little tune and all this kind of good stuff. And the light went off.
The sensor, so, man.
There I am over there in the dark, and I'm saying, my goodness, now wait a minute. Where was that light switch, you know?
Where was that?
What did you do?
Well, when I flushed the commode, the light came back on. So there
That's
I was.
Strange.
My dilemma was over with.
Well, how'd they hook that up?
I have
what a
no
deal,
idea,
man.
But it's just when I went in, it automatically came off, and it went. Must have been on a timer or something and went off at a certain time, and when I flushed the commode, it came back on.
Well, see, it doesn't allow for us old folks. It takes us a little longer to take care of things sometimes than it does you youngsters. If you
well, I wasn't going to say
catch
that,
my drift. That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah, what a deal.
The light went off.
Yeah.
You should learn to do that in the dark, Easton, with all your blind friends.
Well, I did. I had to.
And you flushed through and the light came back on.
Yeah.
What I want to know, Shaw, is how'd they rig that up?
I don't know, but that's kind of the same kind of deal. You know, they've had these water saver faucets for a while, I guess, with the sensor. When you put your hand under the tap there, you know, the water automatically comes on. I guess it's the same principle, boy, but on a timer.
I did not have my cell phone, or I would have phoned a friend while I was in there. I mean, you know.
Now, that's a strange deal, now.
You know, if you've ever gone on a cruise, I didn't mention, the cruise, by the way, was great. We had a great
time. Oh, I meant to ask you about that.
Fine time on the cruise. We had Don and Emily, myself and Lou Ann, and four other couples, one of which was John Conley. uh-huh. who's one of our blind weekend friends that comes down. There were three other couples. I met a lady on here who is a concert pianist. She said that's what she was, and I thought, yeah, I'll bet you are. And the next, we went downstairs, and there's a piano thing downstairs in the middle of the ship, has an open area, an atrium that goes all the way to the sky, and she was sitting down there playing this grand piano.
Really?
Just knocking. And Emily just walked up and said, well, you might as well turn in your trophy. I thought it was insensitive, I mean, you know.
But this lady was a really knocked-out piano player.
Yeah, her name was Rosie Gomez from Boston, Massachusetts. And she was a knocked-out. I did a little interview with her that I'm going to edit down for Blind Like Me. And a couple from Phoenix, Arizona, Carol and Mark McCracken. And, of course, Rosie's husband's with her. And then another people that weren't unmarried folks, where were they from? Somewhere in West Virginia. What the heck were their names? I'll never think. Their names were Jason and Sue, and they're from, I think they work in Maryland and live in West Virginia. Anyway, they were there, and someone other, they got on the cruise late and had the biggest cabin I've ever seen on a ship in my life. I don't know how they did that. Was, of course, it was downstairs away from everything. It didn't have a balcony. But
Don told me about that. Said the cabin was great.
It was huge.
Said it was really large.
Oh, you mean his?
Cabin. No, the one that those folks had gotten.
Of course, ours weren't. They weren't bad. They had a couch and double beds. And the thing I was going to say about this on this cruise, on a train or on every other ship I've been on, has a hold down faucet. As long as you hold it down, the water will. So you can wash one end at a time. This one, you just turn the water on, and you know there. Would just like being in your house.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. The shower was got a good shower, plenty of hot water. I mean, it was a neat cruise. I recommend them. I don't know if we're going to do that again. Is a handyman project, but we'll maybe do some kind of a little retreat in the fall or something where we'll all get together at a hotel, maybe get some more folks involved. Anyway, go ahead, Tommy. Where are we?
Okay. It says, hi, all. Could someone tell me step by step on how to replace the needle on my flexible disc player? Now, these are the ones that NLS used to make. Yeah. I always had to have a sighted person do it for me, but would love to do it for myself.
Yes.
Thanks. Yeah. And this is from Troy Sullivan.
I can tell you, Troy Sullivan, we had him as a guest, didn't we?
It seems like we did.
On the show, I was thinking, it just grasp right at the front of the needle and pull straight forward, and it'll come out in your hand.
It just unplugs, doesn't it, more or less?
It just unplugs, and if it's, what I would do is take a toothbrush that you don't need anymore and scrub just the needle. Just move the needle across it, and it'll pull all that fuzz. Or a sighted person can see all that fuzz to take it out of the needle, and chances are, and then it just unplugs, and then just plug it back in. It just grab the tip of the front with you on each side of the needle, and it just pulls straight out, as far as I remember. I haven't done one in a long time.
Okay, well, I've got a question. When you unplug this needle, can you not flip it over the other way and plug it back in and use the other side, or does it only plug in one way?
No, you can flip it over the other way with it in. I mean, you can usually flip those. It usually has a little lever that you can flip around, but I think you can. But I think they'd probably be happy to send you a needle. But it's probably just dirty, has fuzz in it. A sighted person can pick out that fuzz with the tweezers or take an old toothbrush and clean the needle. Don't use a Q-tip because you'll add fuzz to it. But any kind of any sort of little soft brush would clean that needle. And they just pull out. And as I remember, don't they? Just put out and
yeah, I think so. But, you know, Radio Shack sells, and I'm sure other places do too, some really neat little Q-tip-like things for cleaning discs for VCR heads and things that are like a rubber foam little gizmo on a long plastic little handle thing.
It would probably clean that thing
would
fine.
Be great for
those
that.
Those needles, as I remember, are almost indestructible. It's probably just got fuzz on it from those old. Are you still?
Man, I haven't seen one of those in years.
What would you play on it anymore? They don't give those anymore.
Oh,
Evertone sound sheets is what those things are.
Yeah, the flexible sound sheets.
One of the long gone formats that didn't ever catch on except for blind people. We always got to, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Our guest today is.
Mr. Tom.
Tom.
Huh.
Tom what?
Tom Fowler.
Tom Fowler.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Works at
that's how Jaws pronounces it anyway.
Fowler. Tom works at Smith Kettlewell and lives in California.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be on with him in just a minute. More of the Blind Handyman. Stand by. We'll be right back.
new places on streaming audio at the For the People website. From Houston's Taping for the Blind on the Houston Radio Reading Service. From the In Touch Radio Reading Service and on radio reading services all across the nation. And of course at acdradio.org. If your radio reading service is not airing Blind Like Me and the Blind Handyman, let them know both shows are available free of charge. Contact us at blindlikeme@txucom.net or call 936-634-9500. That's the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me at new times in new places. Help us spread the word to blind people all around the world. Blind Like Me and the Blind Handyman. Available free to qualified blind people and their sight-dependent friends.
Well, the whole point of the Blind Handyman show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this, started this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want a nice house and as kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
You are listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Welcome back to this week's edition of The Blind Handyman, show number 73, is that right?
71.
I don't know how they put up with 71 now. Tom Houston.
Yes, sir.
What I forgot to tell you is
the
phone is now on 17.
Oh, on 17.
So try it's on 17. Tom Fowler, how are you today?
Fine, Phil. Good afternoon.
It's good to have you with us. That may be a little hot, Tom. I haven't quite got it all set up. Anyway, where do you live, sir?
I live in Hayward, California, which is southeast of San Francisco and what is called Alameda County in the East Bay.
But it's quite heavily populated now.
Yeah, it's pretty much variable suburbia.
I like that.
Yeah.
Variable suburbia.
Well, the little area I live in is an unincorporated area. I say Hayward because that's the mailing address, but I live in an area that isn't a city, and it has a lot of larger lots with duplexes and older houses with houses in the back. And I live in half of a duplex with cheap rent, which is why I live here.
Cheap rent.
Yeah.
Always like cheap rent. Now,
cheap rent for San Francisco area, you understand.
I don't think there'd really be any really cheap rent out there. What is your level of vision, sir?
I'm totally blind. I was one of the many, I call it retinal fibroplasia. I guess it's now retinopathy of prematurity.
Yeah, I have the same thing.
Yeah.
They had to change the name because some committee had nothing else to do. No, it's actually more accurate. Anyway, I was born in 46 and, you know, the old 3 months premature bit.
Changed during a Republican administration, I'm sure.
Probably.
So,
I'll have to check that out.
Good. I'll want to know. Next time I talk to you, you'll have that information, I'm sure. But, and so you're born in 46, so that so you're approaching 60.
Yep.
Coming up quicker than you think.
To the end of life. No, I mean, second childhood.
Don't say the end of life.
Do I get to be a brat? I always have been a brat, so I might as well just continue.
You get to do and say a lot of things, and they'll just go, oh, well, hell, he's old.
He's old. That's right.
You know, you can make bodily noises in public, and people will just say, "Oh well, he's just an old man. Doesn't know that that's happening." But anyway, I don't try not to do that. But it's nice to know I could.
Yes.
That's the important. And what level of education? You're obviously a college man.
No, not actually. I fake it.
Really? You do well.
I got about three quarters of the way through a degree in psychology until I decided that that was a lot of hooey.
Yeah.
And should really have finished a degree in engineering and never did for all the complicated reasons we all know about.
Yeah.
And love. And when I've had done various things over the years, including a lot of electronics.
Uh-huh.
Took my position at Smith Kettlewell, and where I've been working for 22 years. They finally decided they could call me an engineer. I don't have an honorary degree like presidents of certain organizations we know. But
or presidents of certain countries.
Yeah, that's right. That's,
presidents
yes.
of certain
more,
countries.
More or less honorary.
I
yeah.
think that's what he got. His second honorary degree from Yale, I think.
That's right.
Been president. I can't complete it. A sentence.
Yeah.
Of course, I can't either right now. But anyway, so they finally decided you were an engineer after working there how long?
Oh, I don't remember when they actually changed the label. They're pretty informal about things
yeah.
like that.
Now, was this the only job you ever, is this all you ever did, was work for Smith Kettlewell?
No, I was in the middle 60s involved in one of the California State Department of Rehab computer programming classes. Which was about the second or third one that I know of done in the country to try to teach blind folks programming. And that was, of course, long before anything in the way of access facilities existed.
I was going to say, in the middle 60s?
Yeah, in 1967, I think it was, 66, 67. And after that, I had a 9-month position as a programmer, which... it was in a business environment, bored me to tears, and for other reasons didn't work out, mostly uh-huh. my own fault. But that, so I did that, and then in the middle 70s I worked in a violin shop for a couple of years because my wife is a professional violinist and violist, and we went into the shop to get some repair work done on her instrument, and it was absolutely fascinating. And I just asked the guy flat out, could I come and work with you free as an apprentice for a while to see how much of this work I can do?
Mm-hmm.
And he was immensely kind enough to allow that. It was a very small informal shop in back of the guy's house in a little cottage, so it wasn't a big professional establishment, although he was a very fine craftsman.
Well, how much of the work could you do?
I could do a fair amount of it. But after working there for several years, nearly finishing one violin, we both did repair work and made them, I felt that there were things I couldn't do, like doing varnish repairs, matching colors, and also there's a very thin strip of wood inlaid around the edge of a violin called a perf piece. Purfling.
Yeah.
And at that time, I had no way of repairing or making the grooves for that, and several other tasks that I felt that I wasn't really quite ready to do it as a business. It also could have been because I was chicken. I don't know. You know, starting a small business when you don't have any money is takes nerve, and it just didn't quite work out.
But you
it was
could...
a great deal of fun. There were a lot of the repair tasks that I could do. And if one got oneself into a position of being a repairer in a shop where you could share tasks with other people in what we might call reasonable accommodation, you know, I'm good at this, you're good at that.
Yeah.
I think a blind person could be a very effective fiddle fixer.
Yeah. You know, but you would think that there are other blind, since blind people are, by and large, a lot of us are just interested in music, so you'd think there'd be another blind Lutherer somewhere, wouldn't you?
I would think so. I haven't heard of anybody. I've heard vague rumors that I've never been able to track down, and I would be amazed if there isn't somebody out there working in a fiddle shop.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing that happened. In those days, the craft of violin making was dying out. There were maybe three or four people in the San Francisco Bay Area who were doing it, and most of those were older.
Uh-huh.
And I think one of the good things that came out of the 60s, one of the many good things, is that a lot of people decided to do something simple. And all of a sudden, there were people who wanted to learn how to make fiddles, and the art has been saved over these years. There are now two or three major schools of violin making in the country, numerous ones around the world, and all kinds of people doing it. And apparently quite successfully. The better makers who advertise well and have good reputations are getting $9,000 to $10,000 an instrument for new instruments.
That was it. Yeah.
And it's probably possible to make a pretty decent living at it.
Yeah, no so kidding.
It's really. The hippies saved that art and a lot of other arts and their souls for it.
Acoustic instruments are back in. People
yes.
are now, I notice, I'm amazed at the amount of people who are playing upright bass again.
Right.
That during the 60s and 70s, or during a lot of that period of time, everybody played electric bass.
Yeah.
You all got used to those. But now all the jazz groups have an upright guy. And I think that's great.
Some of them.
Excellent.
Some of them actually use a bow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and it's just so, I love it. So it's so neat to hear a guy that can really get around on an upright or any instrument. But now, you found that you could take a back off a fiddle and you could glue it back on. You could set the sound post.
Yep.
You'd be as good at that as anybody, maybe better.
I don't know whether one would be as fast. I actually think with practice you probably would be.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you can do all that. You can make a bridge.
You can take a bridge blank and make a bridge.
And fit that. And, you know, you probably want to have a sighted guy around who knows what he's doing to check your work. But I'll bet everybody else does, too.
But a guy taking the time out of his life to do that, I've always been too busy trying to make money.
Yeah.
To learn to do that. And that's great that you did that, because whether you ever use it or not,
it was wonderful fun.
Great experience.
And I miss it. I hope that when I retire, I'll get myself sort of back into it. I've got a stack of shelf full of old fiddles in the garage that I'd like to repair up and just to do it. Yeah. To sell, too, but to repair up and get in shape, and see if I can get my skills back. Whether I'll do it or not, who knows. But it was great fun.
And your wife is a concert violinist in that she has a job with the symphony out there? Or
not quite. She plays in chamber music groups and in local orchestras, and is just now getting to the point where she actually wants to do some solo work. She has a solo performance coming up this week, her first real, absolutely solo piece on violin. She also plays viola, and I go to all the chamber music rehearsals with her. There's no better way in the world to spend an evening than sitting 6 feet from a string quartet. You can't.
I would think not.
It's a major part of our lives, and I love it very much.
And
I don't play.
Uh-huh.
I had to break the stereotype. All blind people are supposed to be musicians, especially if you work on them. So.
Oh, well, that's because you can hear.
I flatly refused.
That's because you can hear so much better.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I tried to learn to play during the period when I was working in the shop, and I went through two different teachers, and they both left town. So I just gave up.
Well, as anyone that plays anything would tell you, violin would be a hard instrument to start out on.
Yes.
Because, first of all, there are no frets. I mean, there are no guidelines. You either
That's
know
right.
where the note
and
is.
It sounds like heck when you start.
And the least little variation in your finger doesn't make the... So, I always thought piano would be the best, because all you have to do is hit the note. With guitar, you have to make the note and then strike the note. With fiddle, you have to find the note, make the note, and, it's just good.
Yep. It's probably one of the hardest two or three instruments. Fiddle, oboe, and French horn are probably the three hardest instruments from everything I've heard.
Yeah.
And No, I do know people who started out as adults, but not very often. And it's pretty rough.
But I didn't realize until just a few months ago how difficult it is to get a job with a symphony.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's a major...
It's amazing. It's amazingly competitive.
Yeah.
And once you get in, we have one or two friends who are in the San Francisco Symphony.
Yeah.
And it's hard work. It is not an easy job at all. You're back and forth and rehearsals and tours and recording sessions and on and on and on. And they now finally make pretty good money at it.
Yes, they do.
But that's only, you know, the very top slice of folks in the industry.
We say good money. I think, you know, a percussionist with a major symphony probably makes $75,000 a year, which is
yeah.
good money, but... It beats selling brooms door to door.
It sure does, yeah.
You know, but that's enough. That's barely enough to live the lifestyle that, you know, if you want
to. You would like to become accustomed.
Sure, that I'd like to become.
He wouldn't. I like to become accustomed to $75,000 a year.
All right. Well, we've talked about everybody else and everything else except what we intended to talk about, and that was what you did at Smith Kettlewell.
But I'm still doing. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you're still. I thought you were. You're still doing it.
No, right. I'm still there.
Okay.
Few more years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I should give you a little background on what Smith Kettlewell Rehabilitation Engineering Center is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There are about 20 of these rehabilitation engineering research centers around the country. They're funded in part by the Federal Department of Education National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research.
Boy, that's good.
Ugh, yeah. What a mouthful.
I like it.
And each one of these rehab engineering centers specializes in a different disability. So there's one for folks with spina bifida and, yeah. you know, different wheelchair problems. Yeah, there ought to be one for wheelchairs. They're pretty disabled, too.
You all sorry that, yeah.
But all kinds of physical problems. We are the one for low vision and blindness.
All right.
And we're in San Francisco. And our goal is to use existing technology to provide solutions for people who have technical problems in job-related and daily living-related situations, mm-hmm. which means we can pretty much do anything we want. Every 5 years, we have to make up a bunch of nonsense to tell the feds what we're promising to do.
So you get another grant. Yeah.
And so we get grants, and we try to get other grants.
Yeah.
Of course, we actually try to do much of the stuff we claim we're going to do, to be honest about it.
Yes.
Sometimes it even works. I'm what's officially called an embedded systems programmer, so anything that needs a little microprocessor in it, I do the hardware and software development for those. And I also do just general consulting and, you know, rehabilitation engineering, whatever is needed.
Now, how many blind people work there? Do you and are you the only
myself
one?
Myself and my close colleague, Bill Geary, whom many people may know, he's been in the field longer than I have, and we've just this last couple of years nabbed Josh Mealy, who some of you may know from Outspoken and Berkeley Systems days when there was a good screen reader called Outspoken.
Uh-huh.
Josh has just finished his PhD at Berkeley in perceptual psychology and acoustics, and his plans are to make scientific and rationalize the approaches to tactile and audible graphics. So people sort of play around with using sounds to describe curves and stuff like that. But Josh wants to make a rational study of it and find out how many tones can you listen to at once and make sense out of it, and how do you actually do tactile maps so that they work. And that project is actually coming online, as many of you who are on the list may have seen a note I put out about it recently.
Sure did.
Josh is developing a tactile map website.
Wow.
We hope will be up in the next few months. And what you'll be able to do there is to go to that website and enter a city, an intersection, and a scale. So you'll say, I want New York, and I want the corner of 15th and Broadway. I don't know if there is one or not. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
And I want this to be 3 miles on a side.
Okay.
Or 18 blocks or whatever.
Okay.
And this, you'll then enter, you have to have a Braille embosser, of course.
Sure.
These, or have access to one. And you will make various other selections, and this thing will look up the map in a geographical information system, as it's called, process it, label it, give you a key to it, and send you back the files that you need to emboss to get a map. If you don't have a Braille embosser, there will be a service, we haven't picked it yet, but there will be one where you can send the files to somebody and they will emboss them and send them to you. So now, wow, all of a sudden, maps won't be something that you get when somebody else decides you can have one, like, wow, so much of this world is for us.
Would there be a way to get an audio description of that corner and what buildings are there? And
there isn't that yet. That's the next level. At the moment, the geographical information system we have access to, which is done by the Census Department of all strange things,
yeah,
because it's free, doesn't have that kind of detail. But that is one of the things Josh would like to do, is be able to describe intersections, for instance, so that when you come up to an intersection, you'll know whether it's a T. Of course, you can tell that sort of thing from a map.
Sure.
A tactile map, but
yeah,
you can't tell what buildings are there.
Yeah.
That's the next iteration, and it's something we very much have in mind that would be wonderful to do.
It would.
But at least with this working, if you're going to a new city, you can get a map of the section of the city you're going to be in and have some idea of, you know, where the streets go.
Now, this is up and running now?
No, it's very close. It's up and running and nearly working to the point where we can put it out on Josh's computer. And they're developing the website, I would say, in the next few months, month or two. If any of you are going to CSUN in Southern California this next week, Josh will be running around there. And I think he'll have demonstration maps available. We don't have a booth there, but he'll be hanging out.
Okay, but we're within a year of having this.
Oh, I think very much within a year.
Man, what a thing.
Will you send a post to the list when you get
absolutely
it up and running?
Oh, absolutely. All right. You better believe it.
Because I can access it from my workplace, which we have a Braille embosser there. And
yep,
when you get it up and running, or if you need someone to help you, to do some testing,
maybe
or something, you can let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Don is access technology at our little college, our little two-year college here.
Yeah.
Does their access, and they have a nice Braille embosser,
we sure
believe
do,
it or
so
not, that they paid for.
Right.
We're happy,
yeah,
about that. What,
right,
what a breakthrough. I mean, what a,
yeah,
thing.
Isn't that a deal?
Yeah, that almost comes to the... We don't like the word breakthrough much around Smith Kettlewell because most of them aren't, but this
yeah
really just about gets there.
It pretty much does, because
yeah
up until now, maps were just a map-schmap for blind people. Who,
oh, sure.
Yeah. Nothing.
Well, even the tactile ones you could get, as I say, they were what somebody else decided you could have. You know, some organization,
yeah,
or institution. Some of them were good, some of them weren't. But Josh is really trying to develop a set of standards for where labels go. And obviously, the labels are in Braille, although eventually he does expect to be able to have them in tactile raised letters.
Hmm.
And perhaps even, I think he expects it to be possible to do them up for laser printers so you can have a large print version. So we're calling them tactile maps rather than Braille maps. So, because we hope it will be possible that you won't absolutely have to be a Braille reader.
Mm-hmm. I've thought so many times, of course, when I was in the fifth grade, they had this huge map of the United States with all the pieces. And I would give almost anything to have one again, to be able to at least spend a couple of days with it. I learned, of course, the eastern seaboard real well. We got into Ohio, I sort of zoned out.
It gets pretty weird back then.
Yeah.
The Midwest is a little strange. Oh, sorry.
When I've got friends in the Midwest.
The Northeast is actually the most complicated part with all those little bitties.
Yeah, but they're all right. I mean, they all have a border. I mean, they're all up against the Atlantic Ocean, so you're easy to put back in and find where they go.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think this would come under the rubric of breakthrough.
Yeah, it's very close to it. And Josh, I think, is going to be doing some other things that are just about as exciting, perhaps more so. I think I can drop a subtle hint that we have some pretty good ideas about how to make a Palm PDA, or one of those, the Palm-type computers, accessible in such a way that you won't have to spend $3,000 for it.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
That's all I can tell you about it. It's a barely getting started project, but I think that really could be very exciting.
It's just very discouraging. My wife bought her a second PD, I think, 2 years ago. It was 400 and something, a handspring.
Yeah.
400 and something dollars. For me to have something even comparable is $3,500.
Yeah.
$3,500.
I skipped it. I don't need one that bad.
No, I don't either. I've actually gotten to the point where, much as I love some of our available technology, I simply won't buy a lot of it because it's too expensive, even if I could.
Yeah.
And I think that there is, in the blindness industry, a complete disinterest in lowering prices because they sell to agencies.
That's
they
the deal.
They don't sell to blind folks.
They figure the commission for the blind's going to buy it, why not sock it to them?
Yeah, right.
And
the only person in the industry who ever lowered a price, Jim Fruchterman of Arkenstone, no longer is in the industry, really. Well, he's got his, I can't think of it, Benetech, Bookshare.org.
Yeah, Bookshare. Yeah.
Which is okay. That's fine. But nobody else in this industry, as far as I can remember, has ever lowered a price in their lives.
Like Freedom Scientific.
Yeah, well, that's the prime example. When they started out in business and bought up everybody in sight, the guy that's their CEO, and I don't know his name and I've never met him, said, we're going to be the biggest. And I knew right then they weren't going to be the best. They're going to be the biggest.
Uh-huh.
So, yawn.
Yeah.
Who cares?
We've got graphic software. We have a digital camera, so we have 3 or 4 digital editing programs. I've got several sound editing programs. Nothing approaches the cost of JAWS per year
of
the initial downstroke.
You have to get into some really pricey software. Major development systems for programming very fancy microprocessors with C compilers and all that kind of junk. Then you're getting up to the cost of JAWS. But you got to do that sort of stuff before it gets that expensive.
And, you know, every year a $200 upgrade.
Yeah.
And they think nothing of that. And that's just raping blind. That's taking advantage of a situation, as far as I'm concerned.
It is.
We'll have a congressional committee. You wait.
Wish us luck. Especially under the current administration.
Why don't we get Al Gore as president? No, he's not running this time.
He's not running this
time. Listen.
I should say that we at Smith Kettlewell are quite happy to answer requests for how do I solve this and such problem. And the way that works is that, you know, somebody calls us up or sends us a piece of email and states what their situation is, and it can be job-related, but it can be just a daily living thing or whatever, something you can't do, usually a technical thing. You know? And we will evaluate it. The first thing, of course, is maybe we actually know of a solution, and we point you there.
Yeah.
We say, and we fairly often have to say this, that we can conceive of no way of solving that problem, and have to say that. Or we'll say, gee, this looks like an interesting task, and we may indeed take this on as a project and build you one. Unfortunately, the way the federal grant works is that we are only allowed to build one of anything we build. And the magic of capitalism is supposed to come along and just want to build 10 a year for blind folks or 100 a year.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work very often. It works once in a while, and you've all, I hope, heard of talking signs.
Oh, yeah, I have.
And we invented talking signs at Smith Kettlewell. I wasn't really involved in the invention. That was before I got there, but I've been very involved in continuing to advance that technology, and that actually turned into a real company because one guy in Louisiana, who is now the president of Talking Signs Incorporated, got a bee in his bonnet and said, I want to do this. And they have not become worldwide as we had all hoped. They're still scattered, but I think they're the best replacement for signage that there is so far, and they can make mobility and orientation hugely easier once you
You know, use
them, which is
you never know things until you try. I'm fixing to run at Carnival Cruises and see if I can't get them to blind equip a ship with talking signs.
Well, you have the contact information for Talking Signs Incorporated, I hope.
I do not, but I know how to get a hold of you.
Well, talkingsigns.com will do it for you.
Is that it?
Yep.
Talkingsigns.com.
And the guy you want to talk to there is the president, who is C. Ward Bond, B-O-N-D.
Ward Bond?
Ward Bond. Yeah.
What a great name.
Really? No,
yeah. You're an actor, Ward, this is Ward Bond. Or an announcer or something, you know?
Not quite the same name. I forget what that... Anyhow, he's out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Well, I'll just drive over and see him. I'm not in about 2 hours.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He is a prince, a true gentleman, and has just dedicated his life in a very positive way to getting this done.
Well, I was there
the other day. Guest.
We went to New Orleans and went right through Baton Rouge. That's amazing.
What a deal.
Carnival, I think if they equipped a ship for blind people have disposable income now. Henry Joyce figured that out.
Oh, yeah?
And, you know, well, there were 14 blind people on this little cruise. 16 blind people on this little cruise we just did.
Great.
So, you know, I believe if Carnival equipped a ship where a blind person could get around easy, it would say, you know, I don't know exactly how it would work, but there are long hauls on ships, and it would just be, you know, I think if they did that, they could count on a lot of business. But then what
I think it would be a guess.
Yeah, I think it would, too. All right, sir, you've been just a most interesting guest. And we thank you. And what I want to do, if you don't mind, when you get the map thing up and running, I want to do an hour Blind Like Me show with you and your friend, talk and talk about it.
And Josh.
Yeah, Josh. And
we'd be happy to do that. I'm sure he would.
If you don't hear from me, call me.
We'll post to the list, and you'll catch it, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're on
the Blind Handyman list.
You're on Handyman
list.
We'll see it, sir. And we thank you, and we'll talk with you in a day or two.
Okay.
All right, Don.
You want contact information to be...
Elder Smith Kettlewell? Yes, sir. We didn't do that. Let's do that right quick.
Okay. My name is Tom Fowle, F-O-W-L-E.
Uh-huh.
And my work email is Fowle, F-O-W-L-E, at S-K-I... Sierra Kilo India for you types, .org.
SKI.org.
That's Smith Kettlewell Institute.
Okay.
That stands for.
All right.
And that's the best way to get a hold of me, and I can pass on whatever to whoever as you like. I only work 3 days a week, so I'm reluctant to give out my phone number because I'm not there a lot.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
We'll just assume that. All blind people have email, don't they?
A lot of them do.
You'd think
a lot of them do.
Yeah.
Probably the ones who need it most don't, but...
That's true. That's true. But isn't that the way the world works?
Yes.
Those who need food most don't have it.
Right.
You know, if you're hungry, you don't. Anyway.
Yes.
Well, we could. I think
another show there.
Bring me another drink, and we'll do the rest of the show. Tom,
okay.
Thanks much, and
good
I'll
to
be
talk
in touch,
you,
sir. All right.
Take care.
Back with more of Blind Handyman Show in just a minute. whole point of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this, started this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young person and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea, and I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
Don Shaw.
Yes, we are back, aren't we?
We don't have much time. Was that guy great?
For the last segment.
Right?
He was a great guest.
Oh, man. What a
really, guy. Really super.
Just has a good attitude, good, nice. Of course, he's got quite a job. I mean, they're developing.
Yeah, what a job, man. It'd be great, wouldn't it?
I was glad to hear somebody else knocking Freedom Scientific but me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always the only one. And I'm not knocking them for their products. What they build is good.
Yeah.
It's just way too expensive.
Yeah, it's just too high, too expensive.
Just way too expensive.
But, man, what a job. Now, wouldn't that be a neat thing to do? You get up and say, man, I'm going to go in and help design this or this or this for them. I mean, what a great job.
Yeah.
It just...
But they're only allowed to build one of something. In other words, they can't...
Yeah, isn't that a deal?
It's amazing. I forgot to ask him. I bet he has a blind audible meter.
We've talked briefly on the phone about that. Also, he's posted some to the list about audible voltometers and things.
Yeah.
And I think they will even send you the plans to build one if you'll email them at Smith Kettlewell. And they'll... Which I bet Tom in the house there could definitely build us up one. What do you think?
Well, he built this one. Did I hear the theme song?
Yes, sir.
Boy, are we that close?
We are.
We're
anyway,
getting there, but I bet you could. That'd be neat, wouldn't it?
It really it would
build
be.
Up one of those.
Let me just mention real quick. I broke a hinge on the door to my dresser, my big chest of drawers. I went to the hardware store and showed the guy the hinge, and he had the exact replacement. So if that happens to you. If you break a hinge on a jewelry box, on a door, on a dresser, on any kind of hinge you break, if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's or your local hardware store, they can replace that. Don't let that be, you know, I put it off for 2 or 3 weeks, but then I walked in, handed him the hinge, he handed me a pair, just, I mean, same screw holes, same everything.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr.
Yeah.
Parr. And they were $1.99, you know, or something. In fact, they complained about me spending so little on Saturday.
Yeah.
Thought I should spend more. And so if you've got something that's got a broken hinge, take the hinge off, take it to the hardware store, and they'll give it to you, bring it home. It's a very blind-friendly thing to do.
We need to do a segment, though, one day when we have more time, just on the hinge. Man, so many things use hinges, of course.
Well,
cabinets and...
cabinets.
We need to take ours off. We're going to do some cleaning and some refinishing on kitchen cabinets. I'm probably going to take some of the old hinges off.
Buy some new ones.
Replace them with some new spring hinges. So.
Spring hinges. They're called cabinet door hinges, and they're a little different.
All different kinds.
So anyway, Don Patterson didn't show, but
didn't make today's show.
We stumbled through anyway, and we'll do it again next week. We hope you'll come and see us. If you have something you'd like to talk about on Blind Handyman, we'll email us at blindhandyman@yahoo.com. What is it?
We're always looking for show guests.
That's right.
And email us either on the list or send to Blind Handyman. @hotmail.com.
Hotmail.com.
We'll get your message.
Or if you want to be on Blind Like Me, blindlikeme@txucom.net. We'd love to have you. Thank you, Don Shaw.
And yes, sir.
Tom Houston.
You're certainly welcome, sir.
Good to have you semi-well.
Well, you too.
We'll talk about that later. Thank
yeah.
you much. I'm Phil Parr. Thanks to Sam Fitzgerald for helping us out today.
Yeah.
Hey, Fitzy.
Went and got a solid drink in the middle of the show. It's always his contribution. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw him. Phil Parr. Bye-bye. See you next week.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions.
1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.